Welcome into the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier from the Hyundai Studios at the Miller Electric Center in Jacksonville. Bucky Brooks with us, as always, from Los Angeles, California. And here we are. The players are back in the building. The offseason program is underway. We're just over a week away from the start of the NFL draft. Football things are happening. Bucky, good afternoon.
What's up, guys? How you guys doing? We're back at it. Guys are back in the building. We're one step closer to getting guys on the field. And it feels good that football is back, even though it never seems like it disappears.
Yeah, I am more focused on the draft probably than I am on the players in the building. The players in the building will be in my on my radar soon enough. But it was good to sort of kick things off with Trevor and Foyer talking on Tuesday, and I thought there was some interesting nuggets out of that.
Yeah, let's hear from Trevor Lawrence to get it going today, including priorities for the Jaguars entering the offseason program. What do they need to get accomplished between now and June?
You know, you got to move on pretty quickly because it's a new year. You know, now it doesn't matter who won the Super Bowl last year. Now everyone's kind of turning the page and going on to 2024. So you move on, but you have to kind of recap. All right, we only had that one team meeting right before we left to end our season last year. And you talk about it, but it's hard to digest that in one night before that meeting. So, you know, we talked about and addressed some of the things that happened, you know, maybe some things that we didn't do well, some things that we might have done okay and need to improve on, just really everything. We've done that the last 2 days, and from Coach Peterson's perspective, from Press's perspective, and then players, you know, some stuff too. So it's been really good. I think we're heading in the right direction, and we know what we need to do. And we got to attack this offseason and be really intentional. There's very tangible things that we need to get better at. Obviously, I'm not going to go into all the details right now, but there's things we need to get better at, you know, for myself, for us as an offense, as a team. And we kind of just put all those out there, and now we're all on the same page of where we're heading, where we're going, what we need to work on. So I think it's necessary to do that at the beginning of the offseason. So you're not just – the worst thing you want to do is you don't want to waste time. You don't want to just come here and work out and go home and really not know where you're heading and what you want to work on. So I think it was good to get everybody centered and know where we're going.
So that's Trevor Lawrence, the full press conference at Jaguars.com. Bucky, it's kind of like the first day of school. You get the syllabus. You know kind of what we're going to talk about different parts of the year, and here's the ideas moving ahead. Now you just got to go execute it.
Yeah, now you got to execute it. And I think it's important that everyone understands what needs to be worked on. And so you can kind of follow the plan and put some mile markers to know where you're at as you're progressing to the goal. And what you want to do is you want to get to training camp feeling good about the state of the team. You want to feel good about the things that you supposedly are working to clean up from last year while building a plan to make the team even better going forward. So for Trevor to acknowledge that, for the coaches and stuff to be on the same page, I look for big things. And I know this year would be different than last year in terms of the hype and the expectations around the program. All of that is dissipated. All of that has kind of gone to Houston, where they're marked as the team that should win the division, should be one of the teams that is competing for Super Bowls and those things. And the Jags have kind of been forgotten about. And so this is an opportunity to kind of go back to being the underdog, to kind of reset, refocus, and really be a better team than you were last year. Even though the record was the same as the previous year, you have an opportunity to kind of make your mark and maybe surprise people once you clean up some of the issues that plagued the team last year.
Yeah, and that's definitely the theme. I mean, Doug talked about it at the Combine, and then both Foyer and Trevor reiterated it, that they're not going to let last season go. There's a balance between looking ahead and using what happened last season as fuel. But if there was ever any human nature last year to let it ride or whatever all the cliches were, you don't get the idea that that will be the case this year. So I'm not huge on that sort of a theme really carrying over once you start playing games, but it's definitely the storyline that we're going to follow all off season. So what the heck, I'll buy in for now. JP,
you're in. John Osier is in. Moving ahead, another one of the nuggets that you mentioned is, yes, Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars have talked about contract extension, and you know they aren't quite ready to give up the details of some of those conversations. But Trevor did say, John, yesterday that they have happened.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent is a question.
And don't you kind of get the idea, and Bucky, I don't know if you heard Trevor or not, but you sort of got the idea listening to him that they know that it's going to get done at some point. I don't think they want to come out and say, yeah, it's going to get done at some point. But there's a feeling that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the guy. No matter how much you nitpick sort of what he has or hasn't done, he's made the he has helped lift the franchise out of the abyss, and 24 years old, the whole thing is still out in front of him, all of those things. Some contracts you wonder about, and they cause stress and anxiety. I don't really get the feeling that this is going to be – I think this is going to be more of a when you get the message that it's done, you're going to, okay, well, it's done. And now I'm sure for the guy signing the check, it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, you think?
But in terms of stress within the franchise, I don't know that this is going to be a a seismic worry, Bucky.
No, I don't think it should be a seismic worry, because what good franchises do is they are proactive when it comes to retaining their blue chip players. And we've seen around the league, like the Philadelphia Eagles made a bunch of signings with some of their marquee stars. I think at some point when the worm turns for the Jaguars is you're proactively signing your star players, the players that you expect to be the pillars of the franchise. We see Josh Allen. We saw that he just got done, even though it probably took a little longer than some of us would have wanted. It got done. And so you have someone that is going to be around the franchise for a long time. Trevor Lawrence is next up, and with the rates in which quarterbacks are being paid, it is in the best interest of the franchise to pay him sooner rather than later. If you feel good about what he brings to the team, not only from a talent standpoint, but from intangibles, leadership, the way that he is trending in terms of a face of the franchise guy, then you pay him, and you may even have to overpay him what the current market states. Because the one thing we know about the quarterback market, it never comes back. It only goes up, and it's in your best interest to pay him now rather than wait till later, because it's going to cost you more if you wait and he continues to play like he has played and shown flashes of playing throughout his career.
And, Bucky, you're a scout at heart, so I know you like the word ceiling and floor, I'm sure. Don't we sort of know that his floor is not bad? I mean, it's I don't know what his ceiling is. But the worst you're going to get out of Trevor is a pretty darn good player, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we know what the floor is. And so now here's the thing when it comes to paying him, because what you want to assess is what is the floor? Because once you pay him, he has to at least meet that floor. But can he meet that floor with maybe lesser players around him? Because when you pay him a lot of money, you now lose some of the luxury of being able to surround them with a bunch of high-end blue-chip players that are making more. It puts more of the pressure on Trevor to be able to do it with younger players on the perimeter, younger players in front of him, because the draft becomes more important when the quarterback gets paid. And same thing with the defense. So we know where the floor is. We're still trying to figure out where that ceiling is, but you want to feel confident about kind of both of those scenarios. So as you're building your team, you can give him the money that he desires while also providing him with enough support to allow him to play at the level that he needs to play at when you can't pay everyone else.
And I thought a key thing yesterday, JP, too, is when Trevor talked about, he didn't make an excuse out of it. He didn't play it up. But when he was asked about how long it took him to feel right after the season, to me it sort of tied up maybe a loose end. He didn't talk about that at all last season when he was going through it. But he said it really took until mid-March where he felt right again.
That's a significant amount of time.
Yeah, and I think that sort of shows maybe it gives a little more depth into how beat up he was, and especially one line he said that, again, he was not emphasizing this, not trying to use it as an excuse, but he talked about how whenever he was throwing or working out last year, I'm going to paraphrase it, but JP, he said he was sort of adapting and sort of trying to figure out how to throw that day or how to work through what he was going through. So I think Bucky, he went 7-7 in terms of interceptions, touchdowns after he got hurt against Cincinnati. I just don't think that's a healthy Trevor Lawrence in any respect of what we're seeing. I think that has to factor in how we judge it.
That does have to factor in, and you do have to do it. Unfortunately, for quarterbacks, you judge once you step between the lines, however you play, whatever the performance and the production is, that's what you judged on.
But in terms of what the Jaguars think they're going to get out of him, I think you have to look at that and say, you know what? We can't necessarily penalize him contract-wise for what we saw in those last five or six games. Sorry, Bucky, I interrupted you.
No, you're right. But I think it also kind of crystallizes why the Mac Jones trade or situation may have been so important to the team. Because everyone is saying, well, why would they go and get Mac Jones when they have C.J. Beathard? Maybe in the future, maybe you don't want Trevor to go out there and play in those games if he's still recovering from those injuries until the end of March. Maybe if you had a better feel for who your QB2 is, maybe you tell him to sit down a game or two, heal up, get yourself back onto the field when you're ready. We're good enough to play with a backup quarterback and the weapons around him to win. To me, what we're beginning to see are some of the answers to the questions that we had early in the offseason about some of the moves that were made.
Yep.
It's the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier, Bucky Brooks. The Jaguars are celebrating their 30th season, and the time to get your season ticket membership is right now, and you can be at the bank for every touchdown and secure your seats at jaguars.com/tickets or call 904-633-2000. We're back in a moment. We'll hear from Foye Oluokun. We'll look ahead to next week, a busy week, of course, with the NFL draft coming up. It's Huddle Up. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, John Osier. And the 2024 NFL Draft is almost here. The Jaguars will be on the clock at number 17 overall in the first round, unless they make a move, of course. Join us at Everbank Stadium on Thursday, April 25th. It's the official Duval Draft Party, presented by Donovan Air Electric and Plumbing. And the party starts at 7 o'clock. Tickets are free. Register today at jaguars.com/draft party. So that's 8 days away from this Wednesday. Hey, you know, and we mentioned a lot of the offensive side of the ball. Trevor Lawrence spoke earlier in the week. Also, Foye Oluokun, Jaguars middle linebacker, who just signed his third NFL contract recently and led the league in tackles for 2 years, finished fourth a year ago. John, you mentioned it, the late season collapse serves as fuel, not only for Foye Oluokun, he says, but for the entire defense.
Yeah, it'll never be in a rear view. Maybe next year after the season. I mean, I got a lot of questions on it throughout the offseason, and it's hard to think about just when it even started. We started off winning, but we weren't winning convincingly how maybe the score might have showed, but we knew that we weren't playing our best football. And I think a lot of those things caught up to us, and then trying to right our wrongs a little too late in the season, then it's a little bit more stressful when teams are hitting their stride and we're trying to find out how to do things right. Yeah, that hurt for sure. And I think it will fuel us. Everybody's committed to doing things right this time around. We don't want to get in that position again. And it starts from the first game all the way to the last, you know. But just keeping improving every week, no matter what the scoreboard is, you know, keeping our standard every week. Because sometimes you win games that you didn't play your best. Now you don't learn from them if you're not trying to get better. I think that kind of happened to us, and we're not going to do that this year.
So that's Foye Oluokun on last season, Bucky. But this time around, hey, new defensive coordinator, possible new scheme, some different parts of that. A couple new faces in key places on this defense. So they've got a lot to figure out in the coming months of how this is really going to feel on defense. So where do you begin there?
First things first, I got to commend Foye Oluokun for his comments. I think he was very transparent. I think he was very clear and honest about a lot of the stuff that was going on maybe behind the scenes that we weren't privy to. In terms of my interpretation of what he was talking about is that the standards were not consistently there for the unit or like the team in general, but particularly for the defense. That when he talked about the scoreboard and not playing up to expectation and those things, it seems like there was a disconnect between what the expectations were of the coaches and what the expectations and the follow through was from the team. And for him to be so forceful and so outright about like what needs to change, I think you will see a difference in terms of the level of accountability that is shown within the team. And those levels come in different aspects. It's coach to coach, coach to player, and then player to player. I think you will see guys maybe a little more demonstrative in their approach with one another, demanding a little more from their teammates, because that's what the team needs. The team needs to be able to hold each other accountable. As much as I love coaches, as much as I love to think that coaches make teams better, really the best teams are player-led teams where the culture is one where players hold each other accountable to the set standards. And hopefully we'll see that. And as they're putting together the new scheme and putting the pieces of the puzzle together, personnel-wise, adapting to Ryan Nielsen's scheme, I think the overarching theme is everyone has to play to the standard. And whatever those standards are, running to the ball, finishing, preparing, putting time in the film room and all that other stuff, everybody has to be on board. And if they're not, then they have to be called out. I felt like a lot of the moves that were made, people leaving, people coming, were designed to make sure that they have the right people on the squad, and then they'll figure out how to play with the pieces that are in place.
Well, isn't Eric Armstead sort of the poster child of that? I mean, that's probably the wrong description, but to me, he's here for that reason. And that if you're 8-5 next year and you've lost a couple of games, it feels to me like he's the guy who, without the coaches saying it, and maybe without saying it himself, or is going to have the tone of the locker room and say, "Hey guys, this
is
our team.
Yeah, we're not letting this slide. I'm
what we're doing,
this.
That's not who we are. It's not good enough. Maybe that need to be said. You just know looking at him that you follow it." And so I guess I know a little bit more about him to feel comfortable that he's that guy. Maybe Darby is too. You know, I think Mitch Morse needs to be that guy. That's what you said earlier, Bucky. That's why they were brought in here.
Yeah, okay. So leadership comes in two forms. It's either organic, where it's homegrown. It's guys that are in the program, guys that have grown up in the program. They kind of know what it is, and they spread it to the new people that come. Or you have to manufacture where you bring in people that you know who possess those intangibles and traits that you desire. You put them in place, and you plant them in each of the position groups. So now every position on the team has someone that can hold their teammates accountable. So now we think about Eric Armstead and Josh Allen taking over control of that D-line room. Obviously, Foyer handles the linebackers and those things because he's a very vocal leader. My observation has been that Wingert is the guy who – Dewey is the guy who holds everyone accountable in the DB room. But you also bring in Darby, who has a familiarity with Coach Peterson, kind of knows how that program is supposed to run at the highest level. And then you also have Darnell Savage, who comes from a winning program in Green Bay. The only way you get used to winning is to have winners that come into the locker room who can tell guys, here's what we need to do to win, and they hold people's feet to the fire. I think what you have seen is a lot of veterans that have come in that have done that. And I would anticipate that when you look at the draft, at the end of the draft, we're going to say that all of the draftees come from winning programs, and they probably have some leadership responsibilities within those programs as captains.
Yeah. Good insight. And the offense to me already has it. Like, you've got Ingram, Kirk. Sure. But they're, again, guys who didn't come here from winning programs. So you still need that element to grow a little bit offensively too.
Seems like it. And maybe the draft is the place for that. We'll see. That means, draft talk is next. So 8 days away. I think we mentioned last week, Bucky, your next mock is like the week of the draft. So we're not going to ask you about a new mock. But
4.0 coming.
That's the last one.
Yeah, 4.0. I think the most recent thing that we can talk about is today we just released the new top fives. I think the top fives, and I think the positions that will be of interest to the Jags will be the cornerbacks. And we broke the categories down into corners, slot corners, and safeties. And just reading the tea leaves and listening to some of the pressers, and particularly Trevor Lawrence had an exchange where he was asked what it was like facing Ryan Nielsen's defense, and he talked about the physicality on the outside. He talked about the challenges of dealing with corners that don't allow free access because they're nose-to-nose. They play press coverage. They make it very physical, make it very hard for the guys to get into their routes, and how they're able to play press while playing man and zone coverage. Well, when you hear that and you hear Trevor Lawrence talk about the challenges from a quarterback perspective, first thing that goes to mind is, the cornerbacks that we're going to look for, they're going to have certain traits. And so that's going to throw a handful of guys off the board, and it's going to make a handful of other guys be prominent figures. So early in the first round, when we talk about pick 17, Quinyon Mitchell fits the bill. Terrion Arnold fits the bill. I would say it's a little early for Enos Rakishaw from Missouri, but he certainly fits the bill, and so does Kool-Aid McKinstry. The question mark that I would have would be on Nate Wiggins, because Nate Wiggins can play that style, can play off. I don't know if physicality, though, is very high on the list. And so as we think about what they're doing to kind of flip culturally defense, I think everyone in the secondary will have to tackle. They will have to embrace the physicality part of the game. And there's going to need to be enough length to be able to challenge those guys at the line of scrimmage, not only on the outside, but also guys that are tasked with playing nickel, playing on the inside in the slot.
Yeah, sometimes you get a vibe, and I just feel like Terry Arnold's walking through that door. I just, you know, and that's, if Quinion Mitchell's there, he makes sense too. I've been saying for months, probably based on my conversation with Bucky, I would just be stunned if corner's not the pick there. And maybe I'm too locked in on it, but all of those guys fit. And from Bucky, mm-hmm. I mean, Bucky, from what you've said, it's a little bit of an unusual year in that the corners do line up where a lot of them mm-hmm. can play press. And I think you told me a lot of them can move inside and play nickel, which might be necessary in that first year, right? I mean, this is a group that sort of fits a couple of things this team needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm a firm believer that this team needs to double down at the cornerback position. They need to have someone that can be an every down outside player. So even though Terrion Arnold can go inside, he's played the star position, which is the nickel position, which is really very similar to what Antonio Johnson did at Texas A&M, playing in the slot. But he also can go outside. But there also needs to be a guy that is established as a nickel corner. I like Antonio Johnson, but there's a difference in lining up playing nose to nose against guys in the slot versus being the slot defender that is in zone, that is playing run and doing those things. To me, the job descriptions are different. And if you look at the roster, I don't know if there's a natural nickel corner on the roster, meaning line up, play man-to-man, play maybe one of the toughest guys in the slot. They may have to go fishing for that. So,
you'd be surprised if there's not a corner in, you know, two corners, not on day one or two, but at least two by the end of the fourth round.
I think so.
That's what it feels like.
I think you need to have that. And if you looked at the depth of the talent in the draft, the depth of the draft, cornerback is one of those positions where you can go. So it wouldn't be surprising to me to see one go in the first round, and maybe you come back in the third round and look at another one. You look at a guy that like a Max Melton from Rutgers that can come in. Georgia has a couple of guys that can play in the slot. Kamari Lassiter is a guy that is of interest. So there are a few different guys that can play the style that the Jaguars seemingly want to play. I think you have to vest in the position, and that's not a knock to the guys that are there. I'm just not as confident that the guys that are there, your Buster Browns of the world, are maybe ready to take that next step. And if you bring somebody in and they step up to the challenge, like, that's great. But I don't think you can count on just improvement being enough to solve your problems right now on the outside.
Let me ask you this, Buck. I'm going to ask a question of the mock drafter. He has many hats, Bucky.
Sure.
How far back in the first round can they go and still get a player of impact along the levels of Terrion Arnold? Like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, because it would make sense, because you feel like they need a couple of corners early, but you also feel like they could really use a receiver in that group that everybody's talking about. You can get a good receiver up until about mid-round four. How far back can they go in the first round and still feel good about it? You follow me?
I would say in most drafts, there are about 18 to 24 players that grade out with first-round grades.
But for what they might need.
Yeah.
Meaning offensive line, draft, corner, you know, you could see good picks out of those positions.
In this draft, I would say that the positions that you're talking about, wide receiver and cornerback,
maybe
there are enough fringe guys, like borderline first and second round guys, where you certainly can get one of those players in the bottom of the first round, and then somewhere mid-level second round, an impact player with juice. Wide receivers, have been known, like, where you can find guys in the second and third round to come. But here's the trick, though. It is so hard to get a young guy up to speed in this offense when you have a bunch of smart players. So if you're going for that, I would say guys that kind of come to mind for me would be like a Ladd McConkey, a Ricky Pearsall, a Malachi Corley. Those guys play in the slot. If it's an outside guy, now you're talking about like a different animal. People like Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman could be a first, but he might be a second round pick because he didn't run fast. The thing that they're missing on the outside, a big body. Like, they have the slot receiver in Christian Kirk. You have a smart guy in Zay Jones. You have Gabe Davis to be the vertical stretch guy, Evan Engram. But there's still that big body in the red zone that helps them when it comes to scoring touchdowns. They need a bigger body, a bigger presence to be able to win some of those 50-50 balls in that congested area.
So that's interesting. You think this offense, I think all receivers, you know, I think it's tricky for receivers, even in this day and age when there's been some exceptions, to come in and impact right away. This offense is maybe particularly tough because you got to be pretty smart to play in it.
I think so, because the way that the Jags want to play, they want to play musical chairs.
Right.
Meaning they want to have interchangeable parts, meaning on one play I can line up outside to the right and I'm playing Z, the flanker spot. On the next play, they may have me on the left, but I'm playing X. Different set of responsibilities. Sometimes, hey, this week we want to move you inside to the slot because we have favorable matchups. To me, it is a high IQ position. So the guys that I would anticipate, particularly coming off of last year, where we had like mistakes and bust and those things.
Sure.
And not just from the guy that is in Tennessee. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like with the younger players that got on the field.
Yep.
I think now there's going to be a greater emphasis on, hey, man, I need a high IQ player who's played a lot, who can pick this up and can pick it up on the fly. Harder to find those guys, but there are a handful of guys that can do it. But I think there'll be a little deeper dive on their ability to kind of pick things up, acclimate to the pro game, and do it on the fly. Because moving around, you can't have one guy that's not up with the football aptitude of the other guys, because it makes it really hard for this to kind of get going.
And there's at least, I know of one instance, certainly, but I'm sure there's plenty of others that happens pre-snap where they don't have time to shift and move around, and you've got to run the other guy's route that is designed for a different receiver. And you know, I know one instance that Zay Jones had to run what Christian Kirk was going to run, and they threw it for a touchdown. I mean, that's what smart players do. I mean, they're able to pick up other routes.
Yeah, and so I want to make sure, because I don't want this to be taken out of context. I don't want like a soundbite to clip and run on Twitter, whatever. What I'm saying is, I think after the experience that the team had last year, I think Doug Peterson will place a greater emphasis on knowing that the people that they bring in and put onto the field know everything about what is going on, and that you don't necessarily need to tell them or show them or hold their hand when it comes to doing it. That's young players, all that everyone is able to hold their own when it comes to knowing all of the different spots on the offense. And there would be more pressure on the people that are on the field to know exactly what you're doing. I don't think the patience level will be the same that it's been in the past, because in the past it came back to hurt them. This year it has to be, everyone needs to know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you have to get off the field.
All right, so the latest top five NFL draft prospects by position, 3.0, is out from Bucky Brooks. It's the top story as we speak on NFL.com, and he has Laiatu Latu as the new top edge rusher. That'll draw you in.
The
That's new. Clickbait.
So he got better
clickbait.
Since the last one.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay.
Well,
he didn't
necessarily clickbait. Get better. It's more so, hey, are we going to be bold enough to say, hey, man, I think this guy is the best player on defense, the best pass rusher. He has all the skills, and I'm going to ignore the medical stuff and just say, based on skills, traits, and talent, he should be the number one guy.
Check it out.
Like
NFL.com, mock drafter extraordinaire. That one's coming up next week. Position ranker extraordinaire, Bucky Brooks, this week.
He can do it all.
He does it all.
A lot of hats.
He's also the host of this podcast.
Yeah.
Bucky,
am I the host?
Not the host.
Am I the host?
He's a star.
I'm just a cog in the wheel.
He's the main.
On the marquee, his name is on the top.
His
name is on the top of the marquee.
Starring Bucky Brooks.
Yeah, with the other guys. Bucky, we'll talk to you again next week, and enjoy the week ahead here and the weekend coming up.
Thanks, Bucky.
I mean, it should be fun.
Bucky Brooks, John Osier, JP Shadrick, our thanks to Joe Fortunato and Brent Reber, and thanks to you for listening to Huddle Up.